What if I told you that the CEO who just laid off thousands while pocketing millions, the dictator clinging to power through brutality, and the democratically elected leader promising change all follow the exact same playbook? Strip away the rhetoric, the ideology, the carefully crafted public image, and you'll find that power operates according to ruthlessly simple mathematics. Every leader, whether running a country, corporation, or local school board, faces an identical challenge: stay in power. The strategies they employ, the people they reward, and the decisions that baffle us suddenly make perfect sense once we understand the hidden architecture of political survival. Here's the uncomfortable truth: no one rules alone. Not the most brutal dictator, not the most beloved president, not even the tech billionaire who seems to answer to no one. Every leader depends on a coalition of supporters who keep them in power. And understanding this coalition is the key to decoding all political behavior. Think of political power as three concentric circles. The outermost circle contains the interchangeables, everyone with some theoretical say in leadership selection. In America, that's all eligible voters. The middle circle holds the influentials, those who actually participate in choosing leaders, like party members or active voters. The innermost circle contains the essentials, the critical supporters whose backing a leader absolutely must have to survive. In a democracy, this might be a fifth of voters distributed across swing states. In a dictatorship, it might be a dozen generals and security chiefs. This framework demolishes traditional categories. Democracy versus dictatorship isn't about values, it's about coalition size. Democracy means many essentials drawn from many interchangeables. Dictatorship means few essentials. When San Francisco switched from citywide to district elections, Harvey Milk went from losing with 52,996 votes to winning with 5,925. The structure changed and an outsider broke through. Coalition size determines everything. With large coalitions, private rewards become impractical. You can't bribe millions effectively. Democratic leaders must provide public goods: roads, schools, healthcare, rule of law. Not from nobility, but mathematical necessity. Dictators with tiny coalitions face opposite incentives. Why build hospitals for millions when you can pay off the dozen people who matter? The longevity statistics reveal the pattern. Democrats surviving their first 6 months face 43% chance of ouster by year two versus 29% for autocrats. After 10 years, Democratic leaders are three times more likely to be replaced. However, autocrats face deadlier initial periods, nearly twice as likely to be deposed in their first 6 months before securing reliable revenue or identifying whose support they truly need. Seizing power requires removing the incumbent, capturing the government apparatus, and forming a new coalition. Samuel Doe, an illiterate soldier, accomplished this in Liberia by bayoneting the president in 1980. Despite lacking governing skills, Doe maintained power for a decade by replacing officials with members of his tiny Kron tribe, 4% of the population, and controlling revenue. He pocketed $300 million of $500 million in U.S. aid while the country collapsed. Competence was irrelevant. Coalition mathematics kept him in power. Challengers have three paths: wait for the incumbent's death, convince essential supporters to defect, or overwhelm the system through revolution. The most reliable method is convincing coalition members that the incumbent can't deliver rewards anymore. When Egypt's generals allowed demonstrations against Mubarak in 2011, they were signaling that his days were numbered. Death creates particularly dangerous moments. The Ottoman Empire institutionalized this through fratricide. When a sultan died, his sons raced to seize the treasury and pay the army. The winner became sultan. Losers were killed. Democratic transitions follow the same mechanics, just less violently. You can't personally bribe millions of voters, so you compete on policy instead. Democracy creates an arms race for good ideas, not because politicians are virtuous, but because the structure demands it. Getting power and keeping it require opposite strategies. Those who helped you seize power are dangerous. They know how to overthrow leaders because they just did it. smart new leaders immediately reshuffle their coalition, replacing revolutionaries with people who owe their position entirely to the new regime. When Carly Fiorina became HP CEO in 1999, she inherited a 14-member board with deep ties to the founders. Within a year, she'd reduced it to 11, removing potential opponents. Her controversial Compaq merger let her bring in 5 Compaq representatives while purging critics. She doubled board compensation to secure loyalty. Despite these maneuvers, HP's stock collapsed from $53 to $20 during her tenure. She was politically savvy but economically disastrous, and lasted 6 years because she understood coalition management better than business strategy. Competence is dangerous in autocratic systems. Talented people become potential rivals. The 3 most crucial characteristics for coalition members are loyalty, loyalty, and loyalty. After seizing power in 1979, Saddam Hussein executed approximately 450 Ba'ath Party leaders, professors, military officers, accomplished professionals. Survivors like his cousin, Chemical Ali, demonstrated unwavering loyalty despite limited competence. Democratic leaders manipulate too. They restrict voter eligibility, manipulate immigration, intimidate at polling places, and split opposition votes. The tactics differ, but the goal remains identical: maintain your essential coalition. Without money, power crumbles, explaining why Prince Johnson tortured Samuel Doe for bank accounts. Taxation provides essential funds, but faces 3 constraints. It reduces productivity, burdens supporters, and requires expertise. The math is precise. Larger coalitions mean lower tax rates. When Mexico's one-party PRI rule ended, tax rates dropped from 55% to 40%. Small coalitions redistribute wealth from outsiders to insiders. Large coalitions can't sustain confiscatory taxes. When taxation proves difficult, autocrats outsource collection or weaponize corruption. Natural resources offer the ultimate revenue, wealth flowing without taxation. As OPEC founder Juan Pablo Perez Alfonso warned, "Oil is the devil's excrement. Oil will bring us ruin." Nigeria earned $350 billion in oil revenue from 1970 to 2000, yet average income fell from $1,113 to $1,184. Resource-rich nations systematically suffer worse growth, more civil wars, and greater autocracy. Borrowing is political magic. Spend lavishly today, burden successors tomorrow. The smaller the coalition, the more attractive borrowing becomes. After securing revenue, leaders balance coalition satisfaction against providing just enough for the masses to prevent revolt. Hobbes was partially right. Content people rarely revolt, but neither do the utterly impoverished. It's the middle group who threaten stability. Public goods like infrastructure, education, and healthcare exist even under brutal autocrats, not from compassion, but to keep workers productive enough to generate taxable wealth. Education in autocracies is carefully controlled. Primary education teaches labor skills, while higher education is restricted to prevent questioning authority. This explains why Cuba and North Korea have impressive primary education, but no universities among the world's top 200. Healthcare follows identical logic. Leaders provide only enough to maintain workforce productivity. Data shows large coalition governments have 31 fewer infant deaths per 1,000 births than small coalition regimes. Infrastructure provision is equally calculated. Zaire's Mobutu boasted, "I've been in power 30 years and I never built one road." When he took power in 1965, Zaire had 90,000 miles of roads. 32 years later, only 6,000 remained, just enough to sell goods, not enough to threaten power. Natural disasters reveal governance structures with brutal clarity. Chile's 7.9 magnitude earthquake in 2005 killed 11 people. Iran's 6.6 magnitude quake killed over 26,000. Democratic Chile implemented rigorous building codes. Small coalition Iran lacked disaster preparedness funding. People endure misery until future life under the current regime seems worse than rebellion's risks. Extremely brutal regimes rarely face revolts. The costs of failure are too high. Autocrats restrict freedoms because they facilitate coordination among discontented citizens. Burma's General Than Shwe exemplifies the autocrat's preferred response. When protests erupted in 2007, his forces crushed them completely, raiding monasteries, dispersing monks, using live ammunition. The message was clear: resistance is futile. Understanding power means recognizing where systems can change. Coalition mathematics reveals that when coalitions expand beyond a threshold, members support growth because societal gains outweigh private losses. The Green Bay Packers demonstrate this. With 112,120 shareholders and a 43-member board, they maintain 98.9% attendance despite their tiny market, far exceeding typical corporate boards. Democracies can improve through nonpartisan redistricting algorithms, abolishing the Electoral College, and expanding voting rights. Developing nations face steeper challenges, though tourist-dependent economies and mobile technology create new leverage points that make oppression costlier. Freedom remains the solution to poverty and oppression. People with rights to speak, write, and organize typically achieve security and contentment. We cannot alter power's natural laws, but we can navigate them strategically. Every vote, demand for transparency, or collective action changes the equation determining leaders' survival. That's not idealism. That's how power works, and how we make it serve rather than dominate us.